It's Wednesday, May the 23rd at 13 minutes after 1 in council time.
Okay, we are back in session. First of all, approval of the minutes for May 9th, 2018. Is that the one?
It is.
Where two of us were in here?
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All abstain?
Abstain.
Abstain. And the minutes for May 16th, 2018, a motion?
Motion to move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion.
Abstain.
Okay. One abstain. Motion carried. New business. Ethics refresh.
Can we do the second one first, because we have some staff here.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Bob and his staff is here, and Bob has promised me 5 minutes or less on this topic. So this is a quick update on a really important project, and Bob came to me about a month ago and said, what do you think about this? And I said, absolutely, this is good to just tell you what we're up to, and I'll let Bob take it over.
Counselors, you probably remember when you approved a position for us to move forward with our own capital planning and asset management late last year. That position is now filled by Jean Singer. For those of you who don't know her, she is our new, let's call her asset manager for the moment, but the project manager of moving forward in our capital improvement plan. So we distributed, I don't want to take a lot of your time, we distributed basically our plan and our schedule for what we're going to do, when we're going to do it. If you have any questions on that, be sure and contact me, but we're not at a point yet where there's anything policy to be done. So we're in the information gathering stage, the data gathering stage. The one thing that I would like from you at this point is permission to move forward with the sole source for our Ming Consulting to do our assessments. And the reason I'm asking for that is, if we put it out to an open bid, we're going to get a lot of bids from property management companies who are not really qualified to do what we're asking to do. Ming has a great reputation. They have worked with a number of local jurisdictions. We're very familiar with them. So they've worked with King County, Snohomish County, Thurston, Cowlitz, Tacoma, Kirkland, Bainbridge. I mean, these guys know what they're doing. We've already been in contact with them. We know that we can get something productive out of them with the budget you've already given us. So I'd like to come to you in a near hearing soon with a staff report requesting to go sole source on this contract.
How do you negotiate that contract with the sole source to make sure we're...
Basically, we negotiated.
I mean,
we had the comparison
of
what everybody else has done and how much it's cost them. But by the same token, there's the reason we want to go sole source is there's not a lot of qualified companies out here to do what it is we're going to ask them to do. We're asking them to come in and do engineering study, you know, just this multitude of expertise that generally doesn't exist in one place. In our discussions with them, I'll leave that kind of expertise up to Gene and people that have dealt with them in the past, but basically it's just going to be simple negotiation. We're going to tell them what we need, we're going to weigh what they cost against how much money we have, and whether they can provide us the service based upon our budget.
And this company's done work for the county in the past?
Not us specifically.
Not ours. Okay.
But like I said, the list that I've read off, they're very well known in this region. We tried to get a contract that we could piggyback off of, but they've already already closed out all the open contracts that we could have come after.
Well, we know the price they charge when it comes to our hearing.
Oh, okay. No, not when I go sole source. But yes, before any contract is signed.
Before any contract.
Absolutely.
And you should actually, Gene's been working on some documentation, so we should have a pretty good idea of their cost even before.
Yeah, we can give you a pretty accurate estimate.
Okay.
But like I said, we started at the other end. We have this budget that was given to us
right.
in order to accomplish this. So what we want to do, and the other reason we'd like to use Ming, is they're willing to work with us in stages rather than have that $1 million contract that was talked about very early in this project.
Yeah.
So they're very willing to work with us in incremental stages based upon the budget that we have. And we think, you know, if you get a chance to peruse this and look at our scope of work and where we're going to go, we think that's the best way to go about collecting the data that's going to be required to make this project work.
Will it be a cap on, so, like, not to exceed? Like,
yeah,
this
well,
is all the
exceed.
Money we got.
Yeah, that exactly. Well, I can't exceed my budget, period,
right.
ever. So.
And if we can't, yeah. It, yeah.
So okay. We'll get what we can out of them for the money we have, and then we'll go on our own from there. We have
So do they know what our budget is?
They don't know what our budget is, but we've discussed price, so they know what ballpark.
Yeah, I hope they don't know what our budget is, frankly.
I'm
glad they don't. how do you know there aren't other people out there? How do you know that without getting RFPs?
So some of these other counties did do. So I've talked to King County and City of Vancouver did theirs their own, and their feedback was they did do a competitive process, and they've all come back to using Ming because you get a variety. You get architectural firms, you get property management firms, and they're going to give you a high level on some of the other condition assessments we already have, and you already have some of those for the downtown. But what you need to program an actual program is we need detailed cost data on systems, and that's very specific. And so what these other companies end up doing is they end up hiring sub-consultants to do that, and you don't have any control over who they're going to hire as their sub-consultants. Whereas Ming has these people in-house, and so we have some feedback on their actual performance of their own people. So that was the feedback I got from some of the other counties that have already gone through this process.
Yeah, my caution is that it really should be an open public process. We are a public entity, and we can be criticized for determining beforehand that we're going to use a sole source rather than allowing people who maybe don't have the expertise, but you can see that when they submit an RFP. So that would be my caution and probably a preference that we do an RFP.
How many other counties did you reach or jurisdictions did you reach out to who've been through this process?
Just to directly, but then they gave us a whole list of other ones that they were selected on and rostered on. So this is a list. There is probably, so I've only talked to two, but of the
and I talked to some well before we even came to you guys with the project, because we had Ming come in and do a presentation. They gave me about six organizations at that point, and I talked to some of them at that point. I also reached out to some other companies at that point besides Ming and talked with them and asked them for examples of their work, and no one could provide what Ming can provide as far as the expertise and the extent of what they can provide back to us. Most other companies out there only give you access into their database, and you have to pay yearly subscription to access the data, where Ming is one of the only consultant company we found that actually provides the county back the data and gives you free for life access to the data. So, and that's a big difference with Ming.
You mean the data they provide on our buildings, mm-hmm. on our facilities?
Yep.
Facilities.
And the format that they provide it in is also consistent with TMA's, the way TMA's capital module is already set up, which is another advantage. Some of these other companies will set it up in a different format because that's what they're used to. Which
TMA?
Means that
TMA is our maintenance system.
And our capital maintenance.
That we will use ultimately to do all the analysis on these buildings.
So the way they do their assessments is consistent with that to start.
That.
Other companies do their things their own way, and then we'll
and
have to ask them exactly, or we'll have to ask them to do mm-hmm. that for us.
So would you be willing, I'll just maybe, because there's no information for us on this company, and you guys have done a lot of work, and we don't have it in front of us. Would it be appropriate maybe to just get sort of a white paper rationale on why you would be asking, short of the works, or public hearing or public meeting first,
right. that would normally be part of the staff report, but we can provide it to you in advance of a staff report. I don't want to put you in a situation where in public.
We want to make sure that you know you guys have done a lot of work, that we're not hanging out to dry, that we have an idea of what it is you're asking and why you're asking it.
Correct. And I agree with you, Councilor Quiring. The standard is we should always go out for bid, but there are certainly lots of precedents for solid reasons, some of them timing, some of them inside knowledge, we know what we're going to get. But in this case, you know, I wouldn't be asking you if I wasn't confident that it was the right way to go.
What would cost us in the RFP process? I mean, is there a cost to
is it time?
Time.
It's time.
Time. Time.
Yeah. Much time. I mean, you're talking about creating an RFP, going out for bid, getting solicitations, reviewing them, grading them, scoring them. It's pretty involved process, yes. And it's when you kind of know the outcome going in, it's kind of an exercise in futility. There's just not that many companies. It's like when you have a piece of equipment you need parts for and there's only one company that makes them, you don't go out for bid, you know, kind of thing.
Bob, have we ever used this company before?
Not us, but we know cities and other jurisdictions that have. So we have good references.
Have we ever done a property assessment at any time in the past?
No, not of this magnitude. We've done hit or miss.
So the old county building.
The Franklin Center?
That's been dated. When did this one get built?
This was, we started moving into it in 2002.
Okay, so we've been out of that other building for a long time. Has there ever been an individual assessment done of that building?
Prior to this one being built, the last time the Franklin Center was gone through was in 83, 84, and it was brought up to code at that time, earthquake code, the existing ones.
If we have property assets, do we have a routine schedule that we have? For example, I can think of a lot of places that we have shops or roles or function and conditions of those buildings.
In general, we have maintenance schedules, yes. We know that, based upon the composition of a roof, it has to be replaced every 15 years. We know that certain boilers go for 25, we have all that in our facilities. What we don't have is a comprehensive view of what all that means in terms of long-term planning to pay for it all, for one thing. And so you've got me coming to you like I'm going to do again when I have an emergency, like the elevator has failed in ME's office, which makes getting bodies up and down to the cooler quite interesting. That's what we're ending up with, is anything that fails out of schedule is a total and complete surprise that we're unprepared.
And I was thinking not just a review of buildings, but an actual assessment of property and conditions of property. We haven't done that in the past.
No, we've never done anything to that detail. So that's what this project is all about, and kind of the impetus behind it.
Gene, so what's your relationship will be with them?
I'd be the project manager.
Of them.
Yeah. So similar function, and for those of you who don't know, back to your contract stuff, I did this in public works for the last 12 years. So, I have a whole system on earned value and how I track them and what my expectations are about them delivering things every month to show me that they're on task. And I don't have any reason to not use that on this. So, and phasing it and everything else. So.
For your information, Gene's the reason we have 139th.
Gene was our former bridge builder.
Yeah,
so, and to some degree, we're relying on her expertise and experience in asking for this.
Okay. A long list of things today.
Okay. Yeah. So you'll bring us back a little more detail.
We'll give you more detail before
this multi-million-dollar project, Gene. Since you are responsible for it.
Thank you.
What are we doing here?
This is the ethics. Are we doing that next?
Yes.
Water. Texas.
Kathleen.
Somebody
bring
us water.
Kathleen had mentioned asking me to do this.
It's okay.
So that's what I'm doing.
Yes.
We model
ourselves. I just took
I don't want to.
I'm just trying to keep things moving because I know everybody's busy. So this is the item ethics refresher. This is the first page is just a photocopy from the rules of procedure. The second page is a section from the home rule charter, and the third page is the statute. So I just sort of gathered some key information, and I'm only focusing on one specific issue of ethics. Ethics is a huge area, so we don't have time for that, and hopefully everybody had sort of the state training. But from your own rules of procedure, you have under 6 about declining to accept anything of value that could be construed by a reasonable and informed person as intending to influence any action of the counselor. And you have the avoidance of impropriety standard. So that's from your rules of procedure. The charter, in a lot of ways, mirrors the state statute, which says that under 5.7, county elected officials shall not use their position to secure employment or special employment privileges for themselves or others. And county elected officials shall not solicit or accept any benefit, compensation, profit, or advantage directly or indirectly from or by reason of the discharge of their county responsibilities and duties. Mm. And then finally, there's the statute 42-23070. And a municipal officer does include county elected officials. The first one is very similar to the charter about special privileges. The second part says no municipal officer may directly or indirectly give or receive or agree to receive any compensation, gift, reward, or gratuity from a source except the employing municipality for a matter connected with or related to the officer's services, unless otherwise provided by law. Then there's other sections here about accepting employment that might look like you're somebody seeking favor or disclosure of confidential information. So obviously it's not terribly specific, but it's really about how is it going to look to a reasonable person? How would something be perceived? Some municipalities, some organizations get a little bit more specific. They talk about what's considered trivial amount or nominal value. They talk about, for example, gifts from other, like a nonprofit, or if you're, you know, visiting your sister county in, you know, another country and you exchange sort of ceremonial gifts.
Let's do that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
We don't have anything like that.
Oh.
I was just at a place we may want to consider.
Yeah. But what I guess what I would distinguish is, let's say you're attending a conference that's sponsored by somebody that does business with the county, and they have sponsored a, you know, buffet luncheon. And everybody that's at the conferences gets food. Yeah. I would not personally consider that accepting a gratuity. It's available to the people at the conference. If you ever have a question, if something comes up, you're always free to contact me and kind of run it by me. And Jim might have some other thoughts to add, but I just wanted to kind of at least let you know where the information is, and you've got it if you need to look at it yourself.
In ours, our rules, what does intended mean?
Well, intention.
Is that really broad?
Usually intention is based on the person who is doing the act. What is the intention of it? Where are they coming from? But it's a mental state.
For a specific ask.
It's a mental state. So you don't always know the mental state. So then you have to defer to
what
we're
talking about. Me,
the person who is seeking to influence,
yeah.
Right?
Person,
what is the intention?
Yeah. Mental. Okay.
But really, I think the key is what would an objective person, a reasonable objective person, third party, how would they see it? I think that's where I would tend to advise where to look.
So all this is good to know, but why is this suddenly coming up? Is there concern?
I don't have suggestions or allegations. Kathleen asked me to do a refresher.
Okay. It's a good reminder, but this isn't a reminder. It's a reminder we've seen routinely just as we update our stuff.
Well, let me build on that question.
Okay.
And that is, in my 40 years in public management, I've found two things regarding this. One is that it's never straightforward. It's always this, what, huh? I mean, it's sometimes it took me like a week afterwards to understand the what was going on. You know, it's not like, here's this, and it's not black and white. It's always gray in terms of the circumstances of something that someone, so that's one thing. The second thing related to it is, in the public life, there are many people that would like to influence you.
Really?
And that some of them, a lot of them, are very skilled in doing that. And as a result, that relates to the first one, where it just doesn't seem, it's like, well, we're buddies. We're friends, and as a friend, I want you to whatever. And it's a more of a very long-term relationship building, which seems, you know, fairly normal and harmless. But back to the two things, that it's kind of gray and obscure, and secondly, that it happens a lot, especially, you know, there are events I know more in Arizona than here. You know, you go there and you're like, whoa, you got every elected official in the state is here with a free beer or something. Yeah. And
that's probably de minimis, but is it not common sense that if somebody wants to give me something of value or provide that, that there's a cost?
I don't think it is always common sense. I mean, you would think it is, but I do think that some things are gray. And in fact, I'm just going to say, I was offered something. It wasn't until a week later that I thought, this might actually be something that I shouldn't accept. But I put out some telephone calls, and I turned it down. But it didn't even occur to me at first that it was anything I should be cautious about. It was an invitation to a function.
So my comments
that I would have normally had to pay a ticket
that it's hard. These are hard because it's always kind of obscure, not real clear, and so I just want to empathize with you, but to think about it, having done this for all these years, have gotten hit up, and I told the story this morning about an offer to go to the White House that I turned down. It's not really pertinent to this, but it seemed really cool in the beginning, and then when I thought about it, I was like, oh, that's wrong. That's really wrong.
You didn't wonder why me?
Well, that's where it becomes clear.
I just think that in general, if we could do refreshers once a year, I think it's always a good practice.
Yeah.
I mean, we get questions all the time in our office along these lines, and it's not just elected officials, it's county employees, it is, different task force and groups that might be providing you very important information that you've asked them to provide. So it's, I know what we do with a lot of the groups that we advise is we do refreshers on a regular basis. So why not do it with the council as well? So it's a good practice and something we might want to think about for your annual, you know, retreat that you do, just sort of a quick, like, remember the rules and that sort of thing. But we didn't do that, so this seems like a good opportunity.
So it is kind of interesting if you're in the state or something, when you leave session, you know, and then you kind of put your behind you, you know. We don't have that option here because we, so if you, I mean, it is two sides of us. We have this work, and then regardless, you can't talk about it here, I know, but we have campaigning, mm-hmm. but we're the same person, you know. So is that, I mean, it is ethics. Is campaigning like or here, or does it go into this? I mean, I know that's
I'm
a sticky
advice.
Isn't that a different thing?
Right.
There's a different section
there's different
for that.
Disclosure requirements.
Okay.
It's
here,
very.
We don't, for your county a position, you do not have disclosure requirements here.
Right.
For this, what you're doing here.
Here.
For campaigning, there's a whole different set of rules.
But it also is very separate, Emily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Our job here is what we're doing here. When we don't campaign here,
right?
And should not campaign here.
Absolutely.
Where it's illegal to campaign here.
Okay.
Okay. That's
very good.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job. County manager, council office staff?
Yeah, that's mine.
Okay.
We currently, in the budget, we have two vacancies of staff, a chief of staff position and a policy analyst position. And we've held those open, kind of waiting for the permanent county manager to be hired. And I was told that the topic came up recently that, you know, maybe there is a need for some assistance here. So some ideas on this would be to define the need, and I have a kind of a list of a starting point for that, to then kind of pull together a piece of paper with a profile and a game plan to do that, and then have that ready for when the new person, the new manager, comes on board to say, okay, there's been a kind of a consensus on this among the council, and we'd like to move forward on this, so then it can get going rather quickly.
So is the chief of staff position the one that Macaulay created, and is it under that specific definition of what he gave it? Because I think it could be something different than how that turned out to be.
Could be different. That could be changed.
And so we're
there's
open
flexibility.
To that. That's not a fixed.
No, don't have
know.
To.
And for a policy person.
Well, let me just draw out a kind of a twist to this.
Sure.
With the budget coming up,
yes.
The thought is that the county manager, the council will be requesting reductions, and it's kind of hard to do when you don't set the example.
Mm-hmm.
So a thought would be that one of those two positions would be proposed for elimination with the upcoming budget. So in which one, you know, that's up for discussion.
Do they have different?
They're different
pay
grades on that. The chief of staff is higher. So in the what I have heard in terms of topics or needs, just as a starting point of discussion, is economic development, railroad contract management, because we have no one. We have a project position. It's for 1 year, 2 years.
Funding and public works.
Yeah, which is not, it's very temporary. A ombudsman regarding regulatory issues, and a constituent relations duties. So those are like four that I've heard. What the most important is kind of to the council, there could be all or two or one, or is there some that I didn't put on there?
In the past, hasn't our railroad and economic development
so
been the same person?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And that
it
was primarily
well that right now, too, considering.
In the time we actually had that person, that's all they did. They did do some
I wasn't here.
Intermediary work on transportation. For example, some of the Cross River meetings and boards. But some of this is specialized. This is all kind of specialized work.
Mm-hmm. How does the... this person get a report to the county manager?
Mm-hmm. I see it as similar to with Lindsay.
So
reports to the county
support,
manager supporting
or somehow,
the council.
Whether it's Economic Development Railroad, whether that's a... We work in conjunction with this person with regard to that type of policy direction.
Yes.
Under the county manager.
Yeah. Very good.
So move it forward.
Okay.
Do we need that? Do we need a policy position?
No, we're talking about, I think we're not sure it's policy. We're talking more economic development rather
coordination
than,
of economic development.
Yeah.
Like we have CREDC, but it'd be...
It's come up several times from CREDC that they would like to have a point of contact that they can go to and steer in the right direction or come to council with policy when necessary and appropriate.
Does that mean you think that we shouldn't have that council shouldn't have a seat on the board?
No.
No, they just want a point of contact.
In addition to that,
they have it with other
more
jurisdictions.
Similar to how it used to be.
Just a point person for economic development activities.
For what it's worth, I am meeting with Max next week. He's been a little bit busy, not surprisingly, with the transition. So I am meeting with him, and they have an economic development group that meets quarterly. Marty Snell used to attend those meetings, and I'm going to start to attend those meetings. So I certainly can't devote 100% of my time to economic development, but at least in the meantime, until we would have somebody, if we have somebody, I'm at least operating kind of as a liaison to them, and have told Max as much. So.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Councilor reports?
I just want to mention that we got this public records request about a letter going to OTC, and that may have come about partly because I mentioned that at our last, one of our meetings, I said that we need to restate that letter at the end of this policy advisory committee in June, just to make sure that it goes through this advisory committee. And we haven't redone that letter, but I would suggest that is something we should do, so that as the policy advisory committee is going to report to the Oregon Transportation Commission, that we're clear about where we stand.
And I don't. When did that record request come in?
It was in the email today.
Oh, I don't think I saw it today. Okay. I haven't seen it.
Okay.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else?
We're going to talk about 63rd.
We're going to. Just an update on the 1/10% mental health tax that Jeannie and I set on. We have a reserve, so what we are going to do is have internal requests due June 8th, so their caseload update, things like that, so we'll get a budget number. Then we have a reserve number that we will know, and we will go out to the community for RFPs to say.
So is this... I'm sorry to interrupt. This is about how we manage a mental health sales tax fund?
Yeah.
Okay, so is that not an issue that this whole council should be considering?
It will come from there. When we get the internal requests, it'll come to us.
But you guys are setting up a process on how that's done.
Yeah, we have the RFP and all of that. The grading system and everything.
What we agreed to do is... identify what we think needs to be done out of the request from...
But isn't that similar to the work session we had this morning where we should be having that discussion as a council?
That's how it's going to happen. And Mark and I agreed that we'll get the information put together. It can either come here in a board time where we've given you the information in advance about how it's going to work. But yes, it was agreed that this is for council review.
Yeah, so it would come from the advisory council to here.
Okay, I'm still a little bit confused, but okay, maybe I'll just wait and see what comes in front of us. Yeah. I just want to make sure that we're, as a legislative body, involved in the process of decision,
and
deciding how we...
And the creation of the process, too, given here's the process that...
Yeah.
Right. Here's the criteria that we have to
actually
use.
I'll send each of you the point system that's graded, that we evaluate.
So why... Okay. I feel like the group might be out a little bit ahead of the council, but...
Somebody has to look at the proposals.
And it's a larger advisory group that actually has quite a bit of expertise.
Understood. But it sounds like that the group is developing the policy around how we make decisions, and then we just get to say yes or no to that. So I'm just a little bit confused about the role of the advisory group versus the council. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll send the criteria out. So if you have questions, let me know.
Okay.
Let us know.
Yeah. Just a question about that. If they have a point system and then prioritize, will we still have the availability of seeing everything that came to them?
Yes. We will publish all the requests. We always do. Even if the advisory council does not recommend them, we will still publish them and make them available for review. It will still go through the regular budget process with the council having the ultimate vote.
Okay, anybody else?
Yes. SR 500. So we had planned to have a meeting. The only time we could get what we thought was enough people together to have a discussion, and it was going to be broad spectrum. It was going to be WSDOT, City of Vancouver, our transportation people, so on and so forth, was going to be last Friday. The most people could come. A couple people called and said they couldn't make that meeting on Friday. So that meeting is canceled. It's going to be rescheduled. Some recognitions that are coming about that are really important for all of us. I mean both city and county when I talk about SR 500. So the West Precinct for City of Vancouver is off 54th. And that route up the hill to SR 500 is their main way. They disperse themselves in the community for calls. So to have that be right in, right out only is for that reason. There's also a bus barn off 54. We're finding more and more examples of impacts, substantial impacts that WSDOT maybe hadn't considered in their first round of alternatives for going on 42nd and 54th to right in, right out. It's most likely that it's heading toward, this isn't firm, but this is where it's heading, is that 54th would be maintained as a full intersection. And we are looking for grant money to look for a safe pedestrian bicycle crossing, which might go up over the top. Eileen and I and Mark discovered at RTC last month that the more substantial improvements that are scheduled for those two cross streets are 2032. That's where they're prioritized in RTC, in the Regional Transportation Council Transportation Improvement Plan. We also want to get some of that accelerated, which will take legislative effort, but a more complete sort of sum of all that will come back to us. So a lot of new information's coming in all the time. I went to the open house. People on the north side that are in the county are very upset and angry about this possibility. 40th Street kind of zigzags to the north. It would be their lateral route east and west. It is not in good condition. There is no shoulder no sidewalks. And there's also a school, Truman Elementary, that's off 42nd. And they're rebuilding that school, I just learned from Vancouver School District. So we're getting a lot more information, a lot more implications, and Mark and I will keep you up to speed as we go.
And they're still at the three options, though, right? That hasn't changed yet.
They've dropped. No, I mean, they're not even talking.
There's still 400 accidents on that road that have to be mitigated.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the issue.
42nd likely will go to right in, right out.
Okay.
And that's going to reduce the, that'll change the, you know, that.
Congestion, the stops, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And coming right down the ramp and trying to get off the ramp, so. We're still working on
Lindsay, where are we at in terms of mitigation? I mean, are we going to look at the impacts on the roads to the north and what cost would be to do improvements on 40th and 42nd?
So I have a request in. I haven't heard back. I'll follow up.
And that's our transportation department.
Mm-hmm.
Who there is working on it?
Well, I sent the request to Heath, and I'm assuming he sent it to his road folks. I'm not sure to whom specifically.
There is a person from
it's
his
Matt Griswold.
Staff.
Yeah.
Yes.
On there.
Griswold.
Yeah. And I would imagine that Matt would be one of the primary people, but I don't know. I'll follow up with Heath.
Thank you.
Okay. And then I think, Jim, we have, maybe this is somewhere else, 63rd Median, 5th Plain DA.
I have that on my list.
So that's a good segue into my topic. Lindsay has like three or four really critical issues like the median, and given the other remaining items in these sessions today, I was proposing that next week we carve out some time to have, because you have interviews next week, so really council time is
like Monday or Tuesday,
and Monday is a holiday.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So there'll no one-on-one. So I'm just looking at the schedule here. Wednesday, you have three work sessions on Wednesday and interviews.
Okay.
So that day
is
shot. Tuesday, you have the council meeting at 10. And it's tough to know. I mean, say 11, they rarely get over by 11. Some do, but usually not.
Depends on what you put on the agenda.
Yes.
Can you do 2:30 on Tuesday?
So.
Do what?
2:30 on Tuesday.
There's something special.
So I know that I have one-on-ones.
Oh, I get it.
So, and those can be moved. I know I have one-on-ones with Councillor Bolt and Councillor Stewart at 2:30 and 3:00. And I can move those. So at least you two should be available during that time.
Yeah. During what time?
The 2:30 to 3:30 window, because I know I'm in one-on-ones, and those can move.
No. Why don't we just, what's wrong with today?
Well, we don't have all the staff here today for a lot of
these
questions.
And it's 2:00 and... You know, Emily and her staff has a number of things, and we got a couple other loose ends, not complex, but we need at least an hour.
We're 45 minutes for this,
it's,
it looks like.
So is 2:30 Tuesday okay?
It's okay with me.
I've got a meeting on my calendar, but it could be changed if Linnea wants to try to change it.
It's pretty important, especially.
Yeah, these
are. So is the one on my calendar.
Oh, I'm sorry.
these are complex items that need to be moved along.
Would it be better if we moved it to like 3:00? Kind of push it a little bit?
Actually, my meeting's at 3:00. Well, I'll work with Linnea to try to schedule. I mean, there's unfortunately in this meeting, there's like 4 other people, so it's going to be a little bit of a...
So but can we do 8:30 on Tuesday morning? Do an hour before?
Tuesday morning?
Yeah.
That'd be better for me, yeah.
8:30? Is that okay?
So when
let's do it 8:30.
Yeah, you have a... council time will start, the hearing will start at 9:45. There's a proclamation, presentation,
that's,
or something.
That's hour.
But yeah.
Hour,
okay.
Hour
okay.
Thank you.
8:30.
Yeah.
Julia, are those people regarding 63rd? Did you say?
No, they're separate topics.
So you'll have a special notice?
Yeah, we'll get it going. Thank you.
Okay.
So 9:45.
8:30.
8:30. And I'll send you a list because there's a number of the PAs that will need to be there.
We have a, Adrian is here for a 3-minute.
Yes, annual budgeting.
3 minute, the 5 minute one lasts for 10, so.
Yeah. Should I set the timer and then
staff to give us a new calendar?
No, I will fail
today before the end of the day.
So about a month ago, we met individually with each counselor and talked about the thought of transitioning from biennial to annual budgeting, starting with the next fiscal year. We have a window of opportunity because we're implementing financial software and budget software, and there is a hefty amount of customization needed for these systems. They all come out of the box as 1 year. Very few governments do actually biennial budgeting. Only 6 counties left in Washington State that do biennial budgeting. We called all of them. We had focus groups with all the departments and offices. We collected feedback. The recommendation from Jim is to move forward with annual budgeting starting next year.
And we talked with all of you, and it seemed pretty positive. We just wanted to check in before we pulled the cord.
And this would help also with your implementation of Workday and the new system, and that's going to...
Very much so. It would not require heavy customization, and it would reduce workload in some areas. It would provide clarity and transparency, and it would provide a chance for the council, especially as new councilors come in, they're not faced with that second year of the budget that they haven't adopted a budget, and it coordinates better with the levy process as well. The largest concerns we've
I'm hearing it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we need a hearing for it?
My job is to have misgivings. Okay.
Yes. Yes. There we go.
So.
Not misgivings.
We would expect we'd be spending half as much on an annual basis than we do in a biennial. So communication to the public and the people who watch the budget is going to be really important because it's going to look like our expenses have suddenly gone down, and we don't want any confusion about that. So we should explain what we're doing and why, and that it's really becoming the standard, because it does sound like that. So the other issue is when we do biennial budgeting, it's very easy to look forward into 2 or 3 bienniums to look at trends, and that's sort of a tool and a guide for us. It's a caution and also a tool so that we see how we're fitted with a systemic decline with increasing costs and sort of stable revenue. So we'd still need a way to be looking out on the horizon, to be looking at what our long-term trend is.
You just do it by years, for heaven's
sake. That's not going to change.
You do it 6 years, 5 years?
It's not going to change. And I also, I would say that I think a biennial budget is far more confusing than an annual budget. The figures that they see for a biennial, you have to explain, well, this is 2 years, it's not, so you have
or
to have
months.
It.
Then when you make partial adjustments, so you impact the current biennial, you're looking at 6 months.
Yeah, it's far better, far more efficient.
Yeah, definitely.
And more transparent.
And we do publish 2 1-year budgets right now, so we do have an annual budget, but it's composed of 2 1-year budgets, so we still have that number.
And you do like a 5-year?
Yes, we do a 6-year forecast for the general fund. We always present major funds to you with a long-term forecast.
Good.
Of the
and you'll continue to do
we will
that.
Continue to do that.
Excellent. Thank you.
So there's no formal action needed until we adopt the next budget. To answer Councillor Craig's question about a formal action being needed, there's no formal action needed at this point. We just need your head nod so we can move forward with business process design. But in December, when we adopt the budget, in our resolution, it would be a 1-year budget for 19. That's the formal action. But we need to know now so we can design software implementation business processes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Sorry to rush you.
Thanks for doing all the heavy lifting before you got to us.
How much more stuff do we got?
We have at least a work session request. I don't have anything else.
So
The rest, I think the rest are each session
items. Well, there's
items.
The work session request. There's
session
one.
Looks good.
Okay.
Maybe 2:15 will be going.
Oh, the work session request.
Oh, yeah.
So we have to call somebody for executive session. Could we do it like in 10 minutes?
Should we say 2:15, 2:20?
We're calling.
Well, we just have this work session to approve, right?
Yeah, and it's something that we need to do.
Yeah, I do. I mean, so, yes, on the work session.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a time frame to start calling people.
That's a yes.
Now.
Like now?
Yeah. We can call them now.
Is that okay?
We're done.
Okay. We're done?
Well, you could say 10 minutes and we could have that be like the second e-session topic.
Or 15. Because one of them's 15.
Okay, then I just have to tell the rest of the people to come up.
And one of the topics, Lindsay, we could do that the first one.
It would take less than 10 minutes.
But it's a 10-minute topic or less.
So we've got actually 3 pending litigation, 2 potential, and then
the contract issue, right? Yeah.
So I would guess 1 hour and 45 minutes total.
So are we adjourned? We're adjourned?
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
I'm out of here at 3 with Kathleen for some interviews.
We're adjourned for executive session, 3 pending litigation, 1 hour, 2 potential litigation, and contract for a total of 1 hour and 45 minutes with no action. Right?
No action.
We're adjourned.